It's been a long time since we've had to use the funeral music. It's been a long time. Thankfully, it had been a long time. Time since we had to use the funeral music at the start.
Yeah.
Cool, though. Things are great. I already don't want to do the rest of the show.
Well, we got a good show.
Do have a good show. We do. Hey, welcome into this week's episode of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. I'm Tyler Mon.
And I'm Anthony Masterson.
Coming up in just a little bit, we won't think about baseball in a real fatalist point of view, hopefully, for a little while. We needed to laugh, and Andrew Orvidal, our good buddy, Coach Fairbell, from Those Who Can't on True TV, and one-third of the Grolics, and you're my and our pal and fellow Rockies fan. Andrew Orvidal will join the show. You can find Andrew on Twitter. He is at The Orvidal there. And
he's one of my favorite people, man.
He's one of our favorite people. He's one of our favorite comedians. He's fantastic, and he is going to join the show for a little while, which will be non-baseball centric. We'll talk a lot of baseball, but it won't necessarily be in the context of like, oh, this is terrific, let's all turn off baseball forever because this has been the worst season imaginable. It's gonna be fun, and there are still 10 days left, and things could be fine. But Andrew, we'll laugh a little bit is the point of all of this. We'll laugh some. Laughter. Happiness. Good things.
I like good things.
I think they're fine. Generally they're good things. Generally good things are good things. Can you tell we're both looking at tweets right now? Okay, let's dive into it though. This week, not a whole lot of fun.
I was petting my dog.
Rockies. Hey, yeah, you got a dog.
Let's talk about that.
There's another fun thing that's not baseball.
Yeah, her name is Zoe. She is a Shepherd Husky mix.
Yeah, Zoe.
She is about a year and a half old, I think. She loves chasing cats and nearly jumping over 6 feet walls. Which is not great, but just found that out today.
Cool.
She's mostly housebroken, except for the time she took a huge dump in the guest bedroom yesterday morning. Yeah. But she is a shelter dog. So she's just getting to her surroundings now. She's realizing this is going to be her place.
Yeah.
So she's starting to test the boundaries, I think, of it.
Yeah.
Which is not great.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that'll definitely happen. That'll
definitely happen. Yeah. She definitely loves Nicole more.
Well, who doesn't, really?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, everybody, literally.
I would be concerned if she didn't.
She loves Nicole more, but, she's warming to me. She's sleeping right next to me right now, so hope she stays.
Zoe. Yeah, she's pretty cute.
Yes, she is. She's a cute dog.
You can see all kinds of good Zoe content at Mastertones on Twitter, and Nicole has posted a bunch of good stuff as well. And Zoe is, was a much-needed lift during a rough week for the... Well, or... Is Zoe the curse? The Rockies are like 1-5 since you got Zoe.
I didn't want to bring that up.
But, I'm willing to sacrifice. It's not like the Rockies have ever made us happy at the end of a season anyway. So, like, it's not like you saved a dog's life and the Rockies are probably not going to make the playoffs. So, in other words, it's like the vast majority of seasons in Rockies history, but you also saved a life.
Yes, which is great. So and we're happy about that part. But, man, I feel like having a dog is something like... It's like chicken pox. You should definitely have one early on in your life.
Yeah.
Because if you wait until later to get it, it's going to be this whole new Pandora's box of problems because like I'm having a life crises on like a daily basis about my ability or inability for that matter to take care of another living being.
Oh, yeah.
Because I've never had to do that before. I've never had a pet in my entire life. Having a dog for the last 6 days has been terrifying all the time.
Like it's probably good that you did this before you explored the possibility of having children.
Oh God, yeah. Oh God, yeah. That was Nicole's whole point of getting a dog before was for that exact reason.
Yeah. I don't worry about Nicole, but you're the most lunatic I know. So
yeah. No, but when she eats 3 bites for food and doesn't finish it and walks away. I'm like, oh God, she hates it. She hates me. She's dying. Like, what am I supposed to do? I'm like, oh, she's a dog. She'll eat when she's hungry. Like,
yeah.
Just leave it out. Like, she knows where it is.
I wish that I had that issue with my dog. Laika grew up on a Native American reservation in New Mexico, and I'm assuming she learned how to eat in an area where the food needed to be eaten quickly, or else it wasn't going to be there for a while because all the other dogs were also going to get the food. So like when the food barely hits the bottom of the bowl before it's inside Laika's mouth. Like, I've never seen a dog eat as fast as she does. And so then, like, she'll go over to my dad's house when I'm out of town traveling for work or whatever, and my dad has a yellow lab named Maddie, and Maddie is like a grazer. Like, Maddie will do that. She'll eat a few bites. She'll wander around. She'll take a nap. She'll do her thing. She's very lazily, very chill, easygoing eater. And like if my dog is over there and Maddie does not eat, my dog will just be like, food's mine.
Well, more
now,
food.
Man. This is my food. Sorry. Yeah. You had your opportunity. Yeah. So I'm a little envious of that. Because sometimes I think, like, you're going to eat the actual dish at some point, too.
Yeah, okay.
You eat so quickly.
We don't really know her background. We know she had a brother that she was a lot more hyper with, and the brother was adopted, and then she chilled out. But she's still got a lot of puppy in her, and she definitely runs back on the bed in the mornings and just houses my nuts, like, with her paw, just, like, just right in the beans.
This dog is, like, awesome.
Oh, man, she got me good yesterday, man.
That is fantastic.
Yeah, I like that's this fantastic. Dog a lot. Yeah. Thanks. Thanks for that. But yeah, that's me. Anyway,
dog outside of my dog now. Anyways, any dog that physically assaults you.
Zoe's trying to ruin my life.
Okay.
But she's also wonderful.
It happens.
And adorable. But I'm terrified when she does even the slightest thing wrong. I'm like, oh my god, I mean, she hates me.
Oh my god. Oh my god. Oh my god. What am I doing wrong with this dog? So yeah, there are good things going on outside of the Colorado Rockies, and unfortunately, I feel like we've gotten to a stage later than I think we probably anticipated getting to the stage, but also at the worst possible time where we had to have one of our annual episodes of, like, let's not think about baseball and how bad things are. Unfortunately, we just get to it this year 10 days before the end of the season.
Yeah, and
actually, I know we did another episode like that earlier this year, but still.
Sure. We've left it for dead quite a few times, but, like, you know, they've always bounced back, one.
Yeah.
And two, there's always been time to bounce back.
Yeah.
We are running out of time to bounce back now.
Yeah. Yeah,
and that is the problem.
Let's talk about some reasons for optimism. Then we'll dive into the last several days. We're recording this on Friday morning. The Rockies open up a 3-game weekend series in Arizona tonight. The D-backs have slipped to 79-74. They are now 6 games back in the division. An elimination number of 4, and they are 5 games back in the wild card. The Rockies, there is still some time, and you are playing 3 teams that are likely not playing for anything. If you can deal an early blow to the D-backs and take the first couple of games in this series in Arizona, I think you feel okay about where you are. The Dodgers, unfortunately, I don't ever buy into the conspiracy of Major League Baseball is paying off the umpires because they want the major market teams in the postseason, blah, blah, blah. But I do find it a little frustrating, to say the least, that the Dodgers, the D-backs right now are the Rockies' opponent, a team that, you know, made the postseason last year, was contending for a division title. The Rockies get the D-backs immediately and then follow it up with the Phillies, a team that contended for the postseason for the majority of this year, and the Washington Nationals, who have won the National League East for like 100 straight years despite never being able to win a playoff series. Still, they've been a very good team. So the Rockies finish on a difficult stretch. The Dodgers get the Padres, then a D-backs team that could well be playing for nothing, and then the Giants, who are playing for nothing. So the Dodgers finish on a real easy roll for the
Rockies. Well, and the problem is there too. Like, you wish that the D-backs would have been more pissed at the Dodgers and shuffled their series and their rotation to try to screw the Dodgers over, because as it stands right now, the Dodgers could clinch the NL West playing Arizona, which, as we remember from, I believe it was 5 years ago, when they clinched in Arizona and they jumped in the pool and the D-backs are still mad about that. They could have that happening once again. So, but instead, the D-backs are throwing Greinke, Corbin, and Godley against the Rockies this weekend, and, you know, probably Matt Cook and, you know, Matt Andrees and whatever, and Clay Buchholz or whatever against the Dodgers next week.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it'll be great. Clay Buchholz, if he decides to make a start, which he did not against the
Rockies.
Right.
They'll probably throw Randall Delgado in a bullpen game. Our old friend.
Yeah, don't go after old friend. How dare you?
Old friend Randall.
So that's a little frustrating. However, the Rockies are playing three series against three teams who are probably not going to be playing for anything. We know the Nationals won't be. That's the last series of the season coming up next week in Coors Field.
Yeah.
The by that time of the year, a Nationals team that has won so many division titles, has made it on the postseason, so many expectations on that team. This year, they are a game over 500. They've got an elimination number of two, so they're going to be long eliminated by the time they get to Coors Field. That team's not going to be playing for anything, and you would just get the feeling that they're probably not going to really care by that point, especially because of the fact that, you know, they've got a manager who everybody said was going to be the savior of that franchise. It hasn't really been the case. And so I would think that by that point, the Nationals are probably just going to be looking forward to an offseason where they're not, you know, going into the playoffs and not winning a postseason series.
As it stands right now, Strasburg and Scherzer are scheduled to pitch in that series in Coors Field. And that sucks. It could be Scherzer going for the Cy Young, which is the only the biggest issue. He's got two more starts against the one of the Marlins and then at Coors Field. So,
but hey, you know, if the Rockies go out and can go 5-1 over their next six games, then you look at that series and think, yeah, man, this will be fun. Get Max Scherzer in here. Get Steven Strasburg in here. Have him do it against a good starting pitching staff. Like, then you get excited about it. It might not be the case. So the Nationals probably not playing for anything. The Phillies have been beaten back. They lost the last one to the Braves. They take on the Braves again for the weekend. That game will be in Atlanta.
Hopefully,
or that series will be in Atlanta.
Braves take care of business.
Yeah, they're 6.5 back in the division. Are the Phillies eliminated? Now 5.5 back in the wild card. So if the Braves can at home handle the Phils in that series, then the Phillies probably aren't playing for anything. And if the Rockies get out strong against the D-backs, then who knows? Then I think you feel okay about things. But aside from those things, you know, the Dodgers right now have the largest number to eliminate a team behind them in the division at 8. That's the elimination number for the Rockies. It's also the elimination number for Milwaukee Brewers in the Central. I'm doing standings from 1936. No, because they were in Boston. Anyway.
Come on, idiot. Idiot.
But the Braves are on the way to a division title. Cubs right now look like they're on the way to a division title. But the Dodgers, I mean, they're 2.5 back. I think had the Rockies not been coming off of a series sweep in Los Angeles, I think you look at 2.5 back with 10 games to go and go,
one of those damn
okay,
games.
I feel all right about it.
One of those damn games.
But yeah, that series, man. I don't even know like what we can really say about it.
No, it was
absolutely brutal.
Yeah, let's just not.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I don't really know what to say. I mean, the thing is, you've got a stretch ahead of you in which you really can afford to lose two games, maybe. You know.
Well, you gotta hope. You gotta hope they don't.
You have to get a series win in Arizona. You have to. Have to get a series win in Arizona, and then you get 4 against the Phillies at home and 3 against the Nationals. You have 10 games left. If you go 8-2, I think you put yourselves into the playoffs. If you go 7-3, I think you got a shot. If you go 6-4, your season's done. And if you go 6-4, you finish at 88-74, which is one of the best marks in franchise history, and you're not gonna make the playoffs.
Right? I mean, like, it's like the Rays this year. The Rays are like going to be 20 games over 500 and miss the playoffs by like 8 games.
Yeah. You know? Mariners are the same way. The Mariners are 16 games over 500. They are 11 games back in the division and 7.5 back. They've already been eliminated in the AL West and 7.5 back in the wild card.
I mean,
So it's a full 162. That's what it takes. And who knows? Maybe this time next week, the Rockies are back in first place. You never know. This Dodgers team has been very unpredictable this season. But I think the ultimate lesson, and before we're gonna make this segment real short, and we're gonna dive right into Andrew and our conversation with him. But I think the biggest lesson coming out of this past weekend is a tweet from our good buddy Dan Lucero, who said, quote, Team A with A, a better roster, B, deeper pockets, and C, a more developed farm system takes 153 games to definitively prove themselves better than Team B. Fans of Team B on my timeline, I simply can't believe this. It must be my team's failings that made this so. I think that's really true. The fact that this is a race on September 21st
With the team the Dodgers have.
Be embarrassed.
They should be embarrassed. They absolutely should
be very concerned. Yeah. Because I don't think this Dodgers team scares anybody going into the playoffs.
No, the Dodgers went, like, they had a team that won like 104 games last year, made the World Series, and then didn't really lose anybody from that team, any key contributors. And then, oh, by the way, added Manny Machado and Brian Dozier midway through the season.
Yeah.
And they just barely took over.
And if the Rockies had had a league average bullpen for the first half of the season, I think the Rockies go into that series in Los Angeles last week with a 5-game lead.
Yeah.
Probably at least, you know, because I think we've talked far more about games that the Rockies let slip away than we've talked about games the Rockies have stolen. And I don't think that's a function of being pessimistic. I think that's how the season has actually gone.
Yeah. No, the Dodgers should be embarrassed. They've underachieved the entire season. And, you know, that's, you know, you can look at it from a lot of different ways, but Dave Roberts does not have a contract for next season, by the way. There's a club option there. So if the Dodgers want him, great. But if the Dodgers don't win the World Series this year, there's a good chance Dave Roberts doesn't come back.
Yep.
You know, think about that.
Yep.
Because, you know, Dave Roberts is there for in-game management and massaging egos. He is not there for lineup construction or roster construction.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Because the lineups are given to Dave Roberts every day. And it's a problem when someone like Yasiel Puig over the weekend hit 5 home runs in that series against the Cardinals, comes back first game against the Rockies, gets 2 hits, and then he doesn't start the next 2 games.
Yeah.
Against 2 lefties, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, and that's with not just Puig, it's with Peterson, with Kemp and Muncy and all these guys. And, you know, the Dodgers have their way of doing things, of course, the Andrew Freeman style, the Farhan Zaidi style. They got their way of doing things. But
yeah,
you can tell that that roster is not constructed in a way that the guys like the situation they're in. Like, sure, they all want to win the World Series. But like, you think Brian Dozier wants to not play every day in a contract year? Like, come on. You know, like he's losing money like every single day. He's not in that starting lineup. And so a lot of the guys on that team are doing the exact same thing.
Right. Right.
You know, it's so, like, you know, the talent's there, but the talent can eventually overcome the fact that people are pissed off in that locker room. Like, and that's what the Dodgers have. The back of the baseball card for the Dodgers says that they're a really good team, probably the most talented in the National League. But they've underachieved the entire season because there's too many issues they have in that locker room.
I mean, if you put the Dodgers up against the Cubs right now in a 5-game series, does that even go 5 games?
I think the Cubs win that fairly handily.
If the Dodgers get hot, then yeah, that offense is terrifying. But on the flip side, like, the Cubs are a better team that have played a better season. The Dodgers are a team that should this is a Dodgers team that should have won 105 games this year.
Well, and
especially after adding Manny Machado.
Right. And the Cubs are, you know, a garbage organization full of garbage people. I mean, especially with the Addison Russell stuff going on today. That's not good. Oh boy. Have you seen any of that?
Yeah.
You seen this? You heard about this?
You seen this stuff? You heard about this stuff?
And Anthony Rizzo just making idiotic quotes about oh, well, this is going on for a year, right? Oh, maybe their investigative reporters aren't doing their job. It's like,
don't you love that we live in a society now where you can just blame journalists for garbage people rather than the garbage people for being garbage?
It's like, oh, like Anthony Rizzo, like, dude, like,
yeah, pretty cool.
So,
I don't know. It's, the next 10 days are going to be interesting. They're going to be stressful, but hopefully they're going to be some fun. And I don't know. We'll try to take your mind off of how crushing the last series was for the Rockies when we catch up with our good buddy Andrew Orvidal, who joins the show to make us laugh and talk some baseball and talk some Those Who Can't on True TV and a whole lot more. Andrew Orvidal joins the show right now. Well, after this week, we had the notion, and Anthony texted me and had a fantastic idea that people need nothing more than they need to laugh after that series in Los Angeles this week. And so with that, we go to one of our kings of being able to make people laugh among PDP fans, which is, we don't have many of them because most of us are just nihilistic, fatalist, terrible
just
people.
Just hate each other.
But Andrew Orvidal joins the show. Welcome back, sir. It's good to have you back. And please save us from jumping off of the ledge.
Thanks for having me back. I'll do my best, but I'm up on the ledge right next to you guys. So,
well, welcome. It's good to have you alongside as we all prepare to leap to our baseball fandom deaths. This has been just a brutal week, and so let's talk about things that are not brutal. No, Andrew, as we had discussed last season, kind of a hybrid fandom. You got to be a Dodgers fan a little bit when you were out in California, being a Denver guy, also a Rockies fan, having grown up a little bit watching the Rockies. This year, you jumped 2 feet on the bandwagon into full-on Rockies fandom in 2018. And so I have to ask you, after this week, how much do you regret that now?
You poor sap.
You know, I don't regret it. Yes. Yeah, last year, it infuriates Rockies fans. And I'm sure it infuriates Dodgers fans, too. It was like, oh, the Dodgers are my number one team, but Rockies are my number two team. Like, if it, you know, whoever... kind of like whoever it's, I like watching both teams and I follow them both really closely. But then after the World Series last year, which I feel like universally anyone watching would be like, oh, the Astros were the better, like as a baseball fan, I definitely preferred AJ Hinch's management style where he was just like, these are my guys.
Yeah.
I'm leaving them in for the whole series, win or lose. These are, you know, this is who I'm going with. And then in contrast, Dave Roberts just micromanaging and doing matchups and is just infuriating. And as a fan, I hated that management style. And also I felt like there was a sort of, and this is just me projecting, but I mean, that's what anything is, but just a sort of like pouty baby attitude. It was like the Dodgers expected to win. And then when it, like, once it, game six, game seven, there was this sort of, like, po-faced attitude, which I also can't stand, because it's like, yeah, it's really hard, and the Astros are a really good team. Right. Like, you have to, nothing just gets handed out, and it just, like, the Astros had this, like, excited energy, and, I mean, like, racist Asian joke notwithstanding, they were this, like, likable team, but, it was, I don't know, I was just, like, bummed after that World Series. I didn't feel like it was like, yeah, well, the Dodgers, like, it was, I mean, there were some good games. There were some amazing games, and obviously it was a close series to go seven games. But I don't know, like, it was, like, it's like a fan of, like, it's like being a fan of, like, a really rich kid who's also kind of, like, a, being, like, a spoiled brat about something like, I bought all of this and I deserve to win is kind of how it started to feel. I was like,
that is true.
That feels gross.
I think it was most perfectly personified last year in, I think, at one time, friend of the pod. Didn't we have Mike Petriello on one time?
We did.
Yeah,
we did,
like, real early on, like, season one or season two. But Mike Petriello last year, now with MLB.com, last year, like, there was whatever crazy game that was. Was that game four?
Game five.
Where it went to, like, 94 extra innings. There were
the,
a billion
the loudest
home
place
runs.
I've ever been in my life.
It was insane. Game that game was nuts. And there are home runs that, like, at any other ballpark, don't leave the park. And Mike Petriello was, like, he was so petulant about, well, this isn't even a home run at Dodger Stadium. Well, yeah, man, because you play games at other ballparks in baseball. That's how it works. Like, that was the
That's part of the fun. Yeah,
exactly. Like, we should be winning. How did the series not end in four games? This is bullshit. Like, no, man, that's not really the way it works in baseball. So having, you know, decided that that this year you're going to be, you know, full on with this Rockies team, then on the heels of managing over the last couple of weeks, we've messaged back and forth with Andrew during these games because they've been, you know, what's the word, mind-numbingly frustrating. So the other night with Bud Black and Puig's homer and all that, managerial wise, not wasn't real fun on this end either.
Yeah, it's, I hate to couch manage, but there are definitely times where you just, like, the decision, like, totally, some of the decision making totally eludes me, like the Tyler Anderson experiment, for instance. Although but it's like, really, like, this is, you're just gonna keep rolling the dice when everything is this close. It just drives me crazy, especially when I think, at least from my perspective on the couch, eating popcorn and drinking beer, having zero information that Bud Black has. I'm like, Chad Bettis seems such a better, he's not going to, like, blow anybody away, but I mean, he's definitely had some good starts. Not that long ago, he went six scoreless innings. He's I think he's more reliable than you can't have a pitcher.
He's a veteran
who's going to give. Yeah, like Yu Darvish with the Dodgers last year in the World Series. Two games, he just handed the other team a massive lead right away. And if we have Tyler Anderson in any sort of playoff situations, like, oh, you give you give one of these other teams, you stoke them to a four-run lead like that. It's like, how are you going to win? Especially when our offense is complete trash these days. Anyway.
Yeah, that's
fun. I feel terrible too.
I almost apologize for complaining about baseball on your podcast. That is complaining about baseball.
Yeah,
anyway, enough about baseball. This is just my normal human interaction every day.
Well, we've been talking, going back and forth in the DMs about Scott Oberg and how great he's been, and like even after the first batter came in, like Oberg, he's been great, and then like immediately he gave up the home run to Puig, which
I jinxed it.
It wasn't even like a bad pitch; it was off the plate, on like 6 inches off. It was where he wanted it. Puig's just hot right now. Like it's at this point. Like, how do you respond to it in a constructive way that's not wanting to go and just in a toaster in the bathtub situation?
Yeah, it's frustrating because I feel like with the Rockies, it's you get one or the other. It's either like you get the high powered offense or you get solid pitching. And just for whatever reason, it's like this team is not allowed to have both. We can't and that drives me nuts because it's like, Oberg gave up a home run. Anybody's going to give up a home run. I'm not going to begrudge a guy who's come in virtually every single night in September when it really mattered.
Throwing multiple innings.
Delivering. It's like, he gave it up, but he doesn't have any support. And a 3-run home run is not an insurmountable deficit. It's like, that sucked. He was out of the game. Still, that didn't end the game.
He had six
for the Rockies, it did end the game. They're like, okay, well, guess that's that. It's really frustrating for a team that the offense is capable of like the insane run generation when everything is clicking. So it's really frustrating when they're down 3 runs and it's like, well, that's the game. It's like that should not be. I don't know. I hate that vibe.
The worst part is too that everybody always says about the Rockies and their offense is scoring runs and they're going to hit and yada yada yada. This is the first year in Rockies history where the team has led the National League in quality starts. The quality starts stat, you can say what it is, 6 innings, 3 runs or less. It's not a perfect stat, but it basically tells you your starting pitching is keeping your team in the game most of the time. And so it's super frustrating, even more so when you have such great starting pitching, which the Rockies have never had. And then you get to this point and you can see it. It's like this close to touch. And then it just gets ripped away from you in like a big brother, little brother style, which is what the Dodgers seem to be right now. They're big brother and the Rockies are like always going to be little brother.
They
it seems
Lucy
like, with like very
and the Rockies
few exceptions.
Are Charlie Brown.
Yes.
They're Lucy with the football.
it's really frustrating. I mean, it's cool to see pitchers who it's like, whoa, like
Freeland,
be excited when like Kyle Freeland's coming in and Marquez like, oh cool, we like, I've always, I think it changes, you guys already know this, but it changes the whole dynamic of your team because it's like, oh well, we have Freeland tonight, we're not going to have to rely on as many relievers, we're going to like, I think it sets a whole dynamic that like ripples through the other nights of the week, and I think it's huge, and to have more than one, to have also have Marquez having such a great year, I think is awesome. Now, if like John Gray could just like recalibrate, then it's like, oh, then we have three. And then it's like, and Senzatella, I've always liked Senzatella. I think that he, is also a promising pitcher. So
he's got stones,
good,
man. That's
things,
yeah. But. Yeah. Senzatella's best, especially his stones. That's it.
What do you guys think is the issue? I feel like there's something weird with Nolan Arenado where obviously he had the shoulder injury and then injury and they're like, no, it's not the shoulder injury. And it's like, well, then if it's not the shoulder injury, then you're just regressing into a bad baseball player. It has to be.
Then he just
like,
forgot
well,
how
then
to
what
baseball?
Is it?
That's what's really
it drives me crazy.
Yeah. He's
got that weird little smirk and he comes up and it's like something is going on. And I didn't hear this quote, but I keep seeing it. It keeps popping up in articles where he said something about he wanted to play for a winner or something. Do you guys know? I missed that quote when he said it, but now I see it pop up from time to time. Like he said something. Anyway, I don't know about that, but maybe if he did say something like that, then maybe that's part of it. Just like a little.
So it was back in late June. He said, quote, "I don't want to lose anymore. I just hate it. It's tough on you. I've only been in the playoffs once and it was only one game and then it's gone. We got kicked out quick. I want a division. I want to win a division so we actually play a series. I see the Dodgers and the guys over there and they've won this division the last 5 years. I know some of the Giants players. They've got their World Series rings. I'm jealous." And you know, that was, I think it was June 30th. In which
and then they went on a huge run.
And then they went on that great run to start July. They play well in August. And then they get to September. And it just seems like, you know, I think even if Nolan is struggling offensively, you look at what he does defensively and you think like, well, other guys are going to have to pick up the slack because nobody can do what he does defensively. And so that's enough, obviously, on any given day to make him still one of the game's elite players. But now it's like we've seen games with multiple errors in recent days and we've seen just like not subpar defense, but like human level defense, which is not what you're used to seeing from Nolan. And it is strange because there was a moment a few weeks ago where he told reporters, like, my shoulder's fine. Don't ask me about my shoulder again. And so then it's like, yeah, well, then are you just, like, being a mediocre baseball player now? Like, is this the new standard?
Don't turn into Tulo, please. Don't turn into Tulo.
And that's what I think is frustrating people is when you see a guy go out and say something like that, like, I want to win. I want to win a division title. Well, then you're putting a lot on your own shoulders to come through in big situations. And, like, what did Nolan strike out the last couple of games in Los Angeles? Like, 5-6 times in big situations? Like,
on 15 pitches.
Yeah, and so that's what really... Really, I think right now is baffling most everybody is you can't have it. And baseball is a supremely difficult game. It's not like you just go out and say, I want to play for a winner. And then all of a sudden you're going to come through in all these big spots. But like once in a while, it seems like it would really behoove Nolan to, you know, I don't know, maybe have a clutch hit here and there lately, which just hasn't felt like the case. And obviously correlation is not causation in this circumstance or whatever. But I think most people are frustrated by you go out and you say these things about how you want to be on a team that's winning a division, competing for a World Series. The opportunity is in your hands and you're not able to come through. And if that's because of the injury, then I think that's somewhat understandable for people. But then you also go out and say, it's not an injury. Don't ask me about the injury again. Well, then what is it, man? Like this is mind-numbingly frustrating to people right now.
Yeah, and especially when at his spot in the lineup where it's like your spot in the lineup is too valuable for three quick swinging strikes. Like I don't know. It just was really frustrating because it's like I think that the team could rally if he was like, oh, I'm injured. I need 2 days off. I need you know. Or I think the teams can rally around that. You see it all the time. They're like, all right, well, let's go get out there and win games even without him. And I think the team is good enough and has the depth with interchangeable position players that I think they could still win. But if instead if it's like, no, I'm not injured, I just want to win, and then it's like, well, what is that doing for the attitudes of everyone on the team if they're like, well, our star world's best third baseman is not the world's best third baseman right now and he's mad and he wants to, you know, he's kind of putting the onus on us to win.
Yeah.
I feel like that's less of a rally around somebody's situation and more like this frustrating situation.
And at some point you want to give him a lot of credit for playing through pain because clearly there's something not right with him, whether it's an injury or not, there's something not right with him. So give him credit for trying to tough it out and be in the lineup for a team that needs it, fighting for their first division title ever. But you know, if it's not helping him, like you got to take a day. I mean, after the Dodgers, like they won that game and they came back and then played well the next week. So, and he played well the next week after taking that day off against the Dodgers last Saturday.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's you gotta give him credit. He's trying here. It's the it's a slog at this point. Like you're trying hard, but
maybe
man.
It's a hustle. Maybe it's all leading up to like an amazing wild card game, or
that's,
like
that's
right when they need it. Then it's like, boom! Then he's just it's just an elaborate hustle.
We've all been waiting for
it.
Nolan, in July. batted 307, 396, 25. That was a 1015 OPS with 8 homers and 22 RBIs. In August, in 28 games, 286, 366, 429. That was a 795 OPS with 3 homers and 12 RBIs. So far in 17 games in September, 239, 284, 478. That's a 761 OPS, by far his worst of the season, with 3 homers and 10 RBIs. Like, it's just not Nolan, and that's frightening, because if they had Nolan going right now, I think you're in a very different spot. And that's what ultimately I think becomes the scary thing about the 2018 season, is all year we've said they're going to look back at these games and think, oh man, if they could have just been able to close the deal in these games, they run away with the division. If they had a league average bullpen through the first 3 months of the season, they run away with the division. And now you get down to this last stretch of the year, and it's like the greatest player maybe in franchise history by the time it's all said and done has turned into a ghost. And whether it's because of injury or something else, like, oh, it just crushes you of everything. And Trevor Story blows out his damn arm, and he and Desmond still in the lineup every day, hitting ground balls 75% of the time. What is happening?
I know. It's, at least it's exciting. You know, it could be, think of how boring it would be to be a Boston or Cleveland fan right now, and you just know you're going to the postseason. That's boring.
Losers. Yeah. Or you could be, I was just looking at these numbers because I had to, because I'm a masochist. The Baltimore Orioles are 44-108. They are 59 and a half games back in the American League East. They're 47 and a half back in the wild card. Like, you think if you're a Kansas City Royals fan right now, you're like, man, how much worse can things get? We're 52-101 and 33 and a half games back. And the Orioles are like, calm down, man.
Hold my beer. Yeah.
59 and a half games. What? How is that possible?
Yeah, I saw that. That's
15 and a half fewer games than they are back in the division. What? So it could be a lot worse.
Remember, guys, it can always be worse.
Something that that we were going to discuss, though, because Andrew brought this point up, and this is something that I was actually sitting on the couch debating the other night after generic MLB The Show created player Chris Taylor hit a walk-off homer. baseball
which is
does
the
not
perfect
he's just like the most perfect. Like, he wears those those super store brand stirrups and his pants up high and just like a terrible beard that's like, it's a good beard, but also a bad beard at the same time. Like, he's got good face coverage, but it's also like, how can it look that terrible simultaneously? Chris Taylor just looks like he came off of a generating machine on PS4. But he wins that game for them 3 nights ago, and it's like, the thing about baseball, and we started talking about this before we were recording, is that you get no time to recover from your anxiety. Like, if you're a football fan and your team sucks, you only deal with that once a week. And so at least by, like, if your team sucks on Saturday, if you're a college fan, or Sunday, if you're an NFL fan, by like Wednesday or Thursday, at least you're like, all right, I'm ready to go do it again. But baseball, the longest layoff that you get, with the exception of the All-Star break, like, the Rockies had their collective hearts smashed again on Wednesday, and we got to do it again tonight. Like, you're right, it's 48 hours, and you're like, oh, what way can they crush me again this evening? Like, I think anxiety-wise, we're all hyper-anxious people in order to be Colorado Rockies fans, and yet for some reason we put ourselves through this. Why do we do this to ourselves?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's just like a masochistic thing. I mean, that's what I like about baseball, is all of the, it's just a series of like super isolated one-on-one matchups. Like, every at bat, it's like a duel, like this pitcher versus this hitter. All these things can happen. So all these like very super specific little tense, especially when a game is close, it's as tense as it gets. I don't know. You must just like it. I don't know. Like, with football, I feel like I'm not a huge football fan, but I've definitely watched enough. It's more about like the momentum of like, oh, well, yeah, clearly we're winning this game, we're crushing this team. I feel like it's a lot more riding the waves of that. But with baseball, I feel like it's all these like standoffs, and I don't know. But yeah, like, and it also feels crazy for a team like the Rockies that is been battling to win their division and been so close, where it's just like they're trading off of the Dodgers in this neck on neck. is frankly, it's like the Comfort Dental race at Coors Field. That's how close it is. it's like the racing toothpaste and tooth and toothbrush. But then,
and we're
the,
always
but then
bristles.
What's crazy is that the Central is so is doing so well that it's really win or go home for our division, and that's what seems really unfair, because it's not like they, it's like, oh well, if you don't win the division, whatever, you'll get the wild card. It's like, no, you definitely could not get the wild card. You're just done. Even if you're a game and a half back from winning your division, is that's brutal. I mean, that's why. I feel a lot differently. It was like, whatever, go get the wild card. But it's like, you could get nothing. It could just be over.
They could finish with the best record in franchise history and not make the playoffs.
Come on, man.
Yeah.
Come on, man. Don't. God, come on, dude.
It's nuts. Yeah, these next. And it's not even an easy schedule. I think the Phillies will come. I mean, obviously, Arizona's always tough. And then the Phillies. And then to end with the Nationals, it's not going to be. And the Dodgers get leisurely time with the Padres.
I mean, that's,
I guess there's
cute.
No givens in baseball.
That's nice.
But, I mean, anybody would be stoked to have the Padres in there. The next 9 days.
Basically, you have to hope that the Braves can win the next three from the Phillies and basically just knock them out. And so they'll have nothing to play for come Monday when they come to Coors Field.
Yep. Yeah.
That would be ideal. That's because the Phillies lay down, then they play the Nationals to end the season. The Nationals are clearly out of it and not interested anymore. And unless Scherzer is going in that series and trying for a Cy Young, they're not going to give a shit. So. And they're at home, and they played really well at home. That's what you got to hope for. And, you know, and really, we're also hoping that the D-backs will lay down, early next week or whatever for the Dodgers.
Yeah.
Or try to win. So they'll lay down for the Rockies and try to win against the Dodgers. So the Dodgers can't clinch in Arizona and go pee in their pool like they did last time. Because they're still mad about that. And that was 5 years ago, right?
They got in there. You got in our hot tub.
It's like, well, then don't have a hot tub in the field.
Anybody's gonna do that.
Yeah. If you clinch at Coors Field and you try to go celebrate in the fountains, people are going to be back there. Like Charlie Blackman will be back there with a gun, and they'll probably pick you off. Like,
that's true.
He goes fishing there.
I saw that ad.
You know, he's got an arsenal just behind one of those trees where Fernando Rodney was hanging out that one game, sitting in the lawn chair in the trees. Chuck's got Chuck's buried a safe, a gun safe back there.
There's definitely a duck blind in there somewhere.
There with his calls.
Yeah.
out there trying to attract people he can shoot.
Yep.
It's roughing it, guys. It's Denver in the winter. It's roughing it. It's fine.
Oh my God. Mm-hmm. Andrew, the with this season perhaps coming to an end far too prematurely. One thing that we know is on the horizon in the not too distant future. Those who can't season 3 will be on True TV at some point, hopefully before the end of 2018. We know that it is ready. It is in the can. There is a launch date coming soon. We can't have you tell us everything about the new season, obviously, but I know you guys are super pumped about the new season. Just give us a little preview of what's coming up when we get to see finally Those Who Can't season 3, which we have been waiting not patiently for, but we've been waiting anxiously for.
Yeah. Well, same here. It's been driving me totally insane. So, we should have an official air date and press release, everything official super soon. True TV's got their own. They're trying to line up all of their shows to launch at the same time. Boom, it's our new programming, whatever. So it'll be a bunch of their new seasons of shows all at once. So they're lining all that up. This is definitely the best season yet. We have, we brought in a new character played by Jerry Minor, if you know who he is, but he's really funny.
Of course, an old SNL.
Comic actor, and so he plays a regular character on the show, which adds new recipes with the character mishmashes and stuff. And we have a great horror episode. We do a horror episode every season. I think this one is the best horror episode that we've done, for sure. So it takes place in a out in the forests of Colorado. Not actually. So we just we somehow managed to bullshit a very small section of Griffith Park into a believable Colorado forest. But it actually worked. Like, when you watch it, you would think, like, oh, you guys are in the woods. And it's like, no, we were in this tiny 2-acre spot of pine trees. But that's TV magic, I guess. So, yeah, it's going to be a great season. Like I was telling you guys earlier, they pushed it so far, I don't even remember a lot of the stuff that we did. So it'll be fun for me to watch as just an audience member who is like, oh yeah, that is funny. I totally forgot that we even did that.
Wow, I'm hilarious.
Yeah. So it's right around the corner.
Andrew, let me ask you this question about being a Denver guy who has a TV show that is based in Denver. When I was a kid, my mom is from New York originally, and I remember thinking, like, it must be so cool to just have everything on TV and in movies. Like, everything is filmed in New York. And when we would go visit my aunt, who still lives in Manhattan, I would be like, is it just so crazy going to the movies and seeing, like, nothing but stuff that's cool that's filmed in the city where you live? My aunt was like, nah, I've never really thought about it. But, like, to be somebody from Denver and be doing a show about Denver, is it, like, a little weird to not film it in Denver? Like, you're out doing all this cool Colorado stuff, none of which is in Colorado, except for, like, the Lion's Lair shot, establishing shot.
Like, the Lion's Lair is my favorite dive bar. I love it.
So awesome. And there's, like, good Denver-related things, but, like, you're filming it in L.A. Like, is it a little strange for those of us noobs who are not actually cool enough to be on TV?
Well, so much of the show takes place inside the school that it doesn't really
That's
pop
true.
Up that often because we don't get a whole lot of
gym.
Yeah.
We try to, the production team does such a good job that it fools most people. Think it is shot in Colorado. Like, when I talk to people, they're like, oh, did you make that in Denver? Do you shoot that in Denver? Like, you just kind of believe what you're told. One of the big telltale things actually in the show is in the school library, there's these bungees across all the bookshelves, which they have in for because of earthquakes. And you'll never find that in a Colorado library.
Oh,
but if you look close, boom, you'll see them in the library there.
And that's cool. That.
But we're super, Adam Caton-Holland is incredibly diligent about spotting palm trees in the background. And like, none of us want palm trees in the background, but
Everyone
Adam,
needs
you would
a,
think that
needs a talent. Yeah.
You would think a palm tree wronged him in the past because he, the slightest hint of a palm tree. Yeah. He's like, get that shit out of here. So it's like little things like that, I think, help with the, we tried to always have at least one scene in Colorado, but I think season 3 does not have any. There was just no opportunity because in the past we had to do it basically. It was like a labor of love, or we did it on our own. We hired these guys in Image Brew, which is a Denver company, and they would shoot the scene. And it was always like a pretty quick scene, and we just didn't have that in this season. But yeah, it's always... It makes me feel proud when people are fooled, for sure. When people are like, oh, you guys do that in Colorado? I'm like, oh, cool. Well, then the production team is doing a great job, like, with all the little touches. The only thing that I ever found was those earthquake bungees. Other than that, I think it's pretty good.
Where's the school you film at in front of in L.A.? Is it in the Valley? Or
What's
is
that?
It, where's the school?
Oh, it's up in Van Nuys.
Van Nuys, okay.
It's up in Van Nuys, and it's where they did Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Nice.
And that's young Sheldon, I think, is there. There's a lot of shows that film there. We'd love to shoot in Denver, but Denver just doesn't have any incentive. The incentives in Denver are really weak. So that's why, you know, Vancouver's getting a lot of it. Right. Georgia, other places where
everything is filmed in Georgia now. It seems strange to me.
You got
to
pony up that money.
Yeah, why would you not just hand that? It's just additional revenue that you wouldn't be getting. I don't get why every city doesn't do that. It seems so strange to me.
Especially Denver, which I think has a lot going for it. In addition to being a cool city, it has a lot of landscapes that it's like, boom, the mountains are right there. The prairie is right there. You've also got the city. There's a lot of usable stuff. The only thing that would make shooting in Colorado suck is the insanely unpredictable weather, where it's like, cool, we need like a sunny day, and it's like, ah, just kidding, in 2 hours it's going to be like an insane
and then
storm,
86 before, yeah,
and then just kidding, two yeah, hours totally. Later it's 85 degrees.
So that's the only real hiccup that I would see, but yeah, it would be cool to make a show in Denver if that would ever was an option. It would be really fun to be able to do that.
I would say that you should do something about, you know, like two weirdos who were lame enough to start a podcast about the Rockies, but it would really just be the most depressing show in the history of television. Like, oh, this is just a show about two guys who have extreme self-confidence issues, so they attach themselves to the Colorado Rockies. What? This is depressing.
So they wanted to make themselves famous by doing a podcast, but they made it in the most niche market possible. Cool.
A niche of a niche. Andrew, one last thing.
Sooner or later, though, the Rockies are going to win the World Series, though, and then it won't be.
Right.
It'll be like, oh, those two guys that are on board with the crushing Colorado Rockies that have won like two World Series in a row. It'll just be a matter of everything clicking together
in a row.
They were on the bandwagon for. We'll just be like, it'll be like at the end of an episode of the Twilight Zone, where we came down, we never actually existed, and then when the Rockies win a World Series, we just vaporize, and people will be like, wait, was it all a magic dream? Was this mediocre podcast the last 5 years a dream?
It's like The Leftovers or the end of The Avengers. Sorry, spoilers. Like,
totally.
We just all disappear.
I don't feel so good. Ooh, yeah.
All right, Andrew, one last thing for you before we get you out of here. I remember this from a couple of years ago, and noticed that when you Google Andrew Orvidal, this is still the first suggestion that comes up is Andrew Orvidal dead. And a couple years ago, somebody tweeted at Andrew a screenshot of his Google results in which it said, this is from Christmas Eve of 2016. This is December 23rd of 2016. And somebody tweeted a screenshot at Andrew that said, Andrew Orvidal is an American comedian, best known for his work with the Grolics, blah, blah, blah. Died December 19th, 2016. And the first suggestion when you Google you is still Andrew Orvidal dead. Did you ever come across why somebody put somewhere? I don't know if that was Wikipedia or what, but like, how did that happen that somebody just decided you died?
Oh, it was this true promo we did. I don't know if you could still find the video, the true promo, but we did a true promo where at the end of the promo, the big true sign falls on me and I scream and it crushes me. And then Adam and Ben and Maria are like screaming and like, oh my God, get help. And then it has a little eulogy picture after that. It says Andrew Orvidal and then my date of birth. And then it's like so clearly a joke. It could not be more obvious, but because America, people did legitimately wonder, and so there was Googling of me being dead, and there were people who were like, not in a joking way, were like, I heard you were dead, like just like weird random tweets from people like questioning if I was dead.
This is amazing.
And stuff like that. But when you watch like the ad, apartment. You're like, how is this fooling people? Like, why would they show that? Why would they show a horrible, horrible death in an advertisement?
Yeah, just keep it as part of the promo. Like, yeah, one of the stars of this show died, and we just used that death on camera to promote the new season of the show.
And people's justification was, well, there was that little eulogy thing at the end with your picture, and it's like, yeah, that again, that part of the joke, like, it's very frustrating because we were like, hey, this is a pretty funny ad, we liked it, and then to have that be the result is a lot of idiots thinking that I had died was a bummer for sure. But that's why that keeps coming up.
Andrew Overdahl is Paul McCartney, is Andrew WK, like, yeah. Is, you know,
if we play episodes of Those Who Can't backwards, we actually hear the secrets behind Andrew's death. There's actually a Reddit, I don't want to call it a Reddit thread, because it appears that there was no comments to reply to this, because this person was so fucking dumb that even people on Reddit were like, yeah, I'm not going to waste my time with this. But the title of the post is, I'm really confused right now. And the post says, quote, my boyfriend and I have been talking about Andrew Overdahl a bit over the last week or so. We just saw the commercial they made for the new seasons of shows. So far, since I hadn't seen the little RIP thing they did for him at the end. That's actually the written sentence, which makes no sense and gives you an idea as to the intellect of whoever wrote this. I do know my boyfriend told me they had used the sign falling on Andrew to give his character a death. Then looked up his death and showed me that online it said he had passed in January of 2016. Just now when I saw the commercial with the RIP thing, I went to look up his death again and it's gone, question mark. I can't find it anywhere. And that is the extent of that post from Driven
Akar. This is the problem
on Reddit.
With putting anything out there is that people can take it like that. That literally
this
and
is
not
the problem with the American education.
Yeah, I don't know who. I think the real culprit is whoever changed my Wikipedia page to say I was dead, because that's what people take as fact. It's probably somebody who did get the joke, and they were like, "Oh, I'm going to change his Wikipedia page to say he died."
Quick.
And then people see that and they're like, "Wikipedia is a fact, even though it's a user edited online." Resource, it's now a fact. So
it's probably just Adam doing it when he was bored one night, like, I'm just telling Wikipedia and say that Andrew's dead.
There's no way Adam knows how to edit Wikipedia or my profile would be bad. Garbage. There's no way.
Oh my god. Well, that is incredible. And you can find Andrew, by the way, on Twitter. He is at The Orvidal there. And you can check out the new season of Those Who Can't coming up hopefully
right around the corner
this year. Right around the corner to True TV.
Mm-hmm.
Also, by the way, in response to that tweet back in 2016, we responded, RIP Andrew, obviously the Rockies will use this death as inspiration to win the World Series this year. And did not happen. So if you're going to die again, now would probably be the time, because a 2.5 game deficit, and like they need a kick in the pants somehow.
Yeah, they definitely need your death.
Rally around me. Yeah.
Andrew, thanks, buddy. This is always so great. And hopefully we gave people an opportunity to not think about how disappointed they are over the last 5 days.
Yeah, well, hopefully we're going to be chatting in the postseason.
Hell
fun.
Yeah.
Having fun
yes.
in the postseason. All right.
Damn right. Coach Fairbell from Those Who Can't on True TV. Andrew, thanks, buddy. We'll do it again soon.
Thanks. Bye.
So big thanks to Andrew Overdahl, who you can find on Twitter.
He's the best.
At The Orvidal, and he is fantastic. And let's dive into some Ask PDPs before we get out of here.
Why don't we then? First one. Is my computer totally shuts down. Would you rather? Come on, geez, good lord. They're from Ryan Ladika. Would you rather fight one elephant sized chicken or 30 chicken sized elephants? Or another Nick at 303 NYC comes in and says one Aaron Judge sized Jose Altuve or 30 Jose Altuve sized Aaron Judges?
You're going to die either way in the last one. Because Altuve is so good and so talented and so scrappy that whether he was Aaron Judge size and he snapped your neck in one little swoop motion, or I feel like just his size alone would translate over to the Judges if they were 30 Jose Altuve sized
sure.
Aaron Judges. I would probably take the Judges. I don't want to mess with Jose Altuve at any size.
No, that's fair.
If I wouldn't mess with him at 5'3 or whatever he is, sure, shit, not going to mess with him at 6'8.
Nah. Nah, absolutely not.
And as far as the chicken or the elephants go, I think I go with the elephant-sized chicken. Bring it on, bitch.
Bring it on, Bubba.
from our good buddy Nikki Palmi in Austria. And Nikki, by the way, has turned into one of the Photoshop
wizard. Come on, man.
Twitter.
Yeah.
And Nikki asks, quote, what is the cure for Stockholm syndrome and why do I love the Rockies?
Well, Nikki, you're closer to Stockholm. Why don't you go find out?
Oh,
dad joke.
That is
sorry. I'm a child of a beautiful young furry child now. a furry daughter. So I can make those jokes.
You're a child of that child?
A fur child.
Oh, okay. Sure.
Sure. So the cure for Stockholm Syndrome, isn't it just like escaping? But like, I know the point, you don't want to escape if you're a Stockholm Syndrome because you side with your captors. So I don't know. Like, I think it's got to be some kind of outside force, right, to cure Stockholm Syndrome?
I guess. You have to be like re-brainwashed.
Yeah. I think so.
I think if, Nikki, in your case, you got to travel to like the German Bundesliga, baseball Bundesliga, not the soccer Bundesliga. You have to have somebody there just like, I guess, convert you to being a local fan of a team that's not the Rockies, which, you know, there are some really good names among Bundesliga teams. You could be a fan of the Doren Wild Farmers, for example, or the Untouchables Paderborn, the Mannheim Tornadoes, who I know are a legendary German baseball team. So there's a whole lot of things that you could jump on board with baseball wise that are not the Rockies. But I would imagine those, you know, like some of us just have those teams follow us. Like I'm a Sydney Blue Sox fan in the Australian Baseball League. The Blue Sox have never won anything. Like they've never even made it to a championship series. They've been the most talented team in the Australian League for several seasons out of the league's now nine seasons coming up this year.
They got a cool ass logo.
They got a great logo based on at least slightly on a former logo from the Colorado Springs Sky Sox. They've never won anything. So it's just kind of like, you know, some of us are just, we're just sucked into that vortex.
Yeah. All right, from E-Man 093, worst collapse in franchise history or nah? And I will say, obviously, we have 10 games to go. This is not necessarily a collapse yet. We do not know how the next game is going to play out because right now, 2010 will always be by far the worst collapse in franchise history. 2010, that 2010 Rockies team was the best team this city has ever seen. The most talented, the best starting pitching until this year, really. You had guys at the height of their careers, and that team should have done so much. And on the morning of, let's see, on the morning of September 19th, 2010, the Rockies were 82-66. They were one game back of the division-leading San Diego Padres. The Giants were a half game back of the Padres, Rockies a half game back of them. So the Rockies were just outside the wild card race, but they were playing very well. They had just won three straight, and they'd just been on a nine-game win streak. So they had won 12 of 14 to get to where they were right now. Joey Chacín just beat the crap out of the Dodgers in a game at Dodger Stadium. Things were looking great. On a Sunday, the Dodgers walked off the Rockies in 11 innings. Manny Del Carmen took the loss in that game. And then it all spiraled out of control from there.
Manny Del Carmen.
Yeah, right. The Rockies ended up losing 12 of their final 13 games to finish 83-79. And a lot of those games were very, very close games. They got swept in Arizona after that, with two of those games coming by two runs or less. The only game they won coming home against the Giants was a walk-off in 10 innings. They won that game 10-9, but they lost every other game in that series by one run and two runs. Then the Dodgers came to town. They lost three games by two runs, and one run, and then ended up losing four straight at St. Louis to end the season, including one on a walk-off the second day of the second to last day of the season. That is definitely by far the biggest collapse in franchise history. And that was the month in September that Tulo had like 15 homers in that month. Yep. He was absolutely out of his damn mind at the plate, and they still couldn't. He was the only one that was hitting. They couldn't do anything besides Tulo, and it was it was so tough to see. But like there are correlations, because here we are on September 21st and the Rockies right now, as it stands, are 82-70 and they're a game and a half out. And you just have to hope that 2010 doesn't rear its ugly head, because that was the most disappointed I've ever been at the end of a baseball season ever. Because that 2010 team was so good.
Yeah, that's I mean, this stretch right now is bad. It's also two bad series. If the Rockies go to Arizona and lay an egg, if they get swept or they lose that series in Arizona and then, they come home at 2-7 on a nine-game road trip, then that's a choke job. Two difficult series, one against the best team in the division and one in a ballpark in which you never play well, in which they were able to at least get one game. It's not good, but I don't think it qualifies as being the biggest choke job in franchise history, because these are not easy. Had they gotten these series at home and they lose 5 out of 6, then yeah, I think that's a choke job.
Sure.
This, it all rides on what happens in Arizona, what happens beyond. Our good buddy Charlie Henderson at ChuckHend17, a good pal of mine, asked, how many of the remaining 10 games do the Rockies need to win to make the postseason? He thinks 7. Yeah, I agree. At least 7. Probably 8. I think you probably need to go 8-2 in order to guarantee yourselves a spot and hope for some help. Right now, if you go 8-2, you need the Dodgers to go 5-5 in order to win the division.
Yeah,
that's a tall ask.
And listen, like the D-backs have played the Dodgers pretty well this year for the most part, except for the last series, of course, where R.T. Bradley blew every game in that series. The Giants will always play the Dodgers tough no matter what, no matter if they're out of it or not. The Dodgers have played very poorly against the Giants this year. I think the Giants actually have the season series right now. It's set 9-7. So because of the rivalry, those games will be heightened. You got to hope the Padres, can do something worthwhile, but who knows? All right. From Matt Patston at Matt Patston. Curious to hear whether you have any updated Dwayne Espy thoughts. Would having a different hitting coach change anything? And that's, everyone thinks like hitting coach in Denver for the Rockies, like being the, Peyton Manning's backup for 20 years, like Jim Sorgi. It's like, oh, you don't have to do anything. It's the easiest job in the world.
Yeah.
That's not exactly the case.
I mean, the Rockies, when you look back at franchise history, the Rockies hitting coach, this has been the run of Rockies hitting coaches just since the 2007 season. Do you even remember the name of the hitting coach for the 2007 team that went to the World Series?
No,
because I don't. And even reading the name, I don't remember this name. Rick Shue, S-C-H-U. Nope. I have no idea who that guy is.
Oh, it's not even related to like Elizabeth Shue?
No. It's like Schumann, but without the ending of the last name.
Also, I'm just seeing like Elizabeth Shue on these promos on Up TV while I'm watching Home Improvement for Adventures of Babysitting. And man, she was such a smoke show back in the 80s.
Yeah, that's true. Four seasons prior to Rick Shue being the Rockies hitting coach, the Rockies hitting coach was one Dwayne Espy. Dwayne Espy, Rick Shue, 2007-2008, Don Baylor, 2009 and 2010,
sure.
Carney Lansford,
right.
2011 and 2012, Dante Bichette, 2013, the Blake Doyle experiment from 2014 through 2016, and Dwayne Espy each of the last 2 years. I don't know how much of a difference it really makes. I think if the Rockies had the world's greatest hitting coach, maybe they are a little bit improved offensively, but I don't think it really puts this team over the top because I don't think that it's an approach thing that's really been the problem with the Rockies. I don't think it's a mechanical thing. I think for certain guys, I think Ian Desmond would certainly benefit from somebody getting in his ear and telling him to do something differently at the plate. But I don't think that it's just this team just needs somebody giving them different input. I don't think that that's the case. Now, granted, I'll fully admit, I'm not smart enough to know whether or not a hitting coach is doing his job.
Right.
But I think throughout franchise history, we've always been quick to say, well, this is Blake Doyle's fault. This is Dante Bichette's fault. This is Carney Lansford's fault. I will say I have heard Dwayne Espy, when he was working in the Rockies minor league organization, was a guy who pushed some people the wrong direction. And so I thought it was kind of interesting that he was given this job again at the major league level. But I'm not sure. I'm not sure if that's something where you really get that much of a change in results by changing the guy in that spot.
Yeah, I think hitting coaches and pitching coaches are better used as scapegoats than anything else. I mean, of course, they have knowledge they can impart, but like they're there to be scapegoated if the manager has a tough year and they don't want to fire the manager yet, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But all right. From Ryan Bloom at Bloomer Deluxe. He has asked this question a few times. We have not gotten to it because I don't play Fortnite. I don't know if you do.
Yeah,
but
no, I don't either.
That has been the thing for all major and minor league baseball players this year is Fortnite. And he sent us a picture and said, there's a Purple Row piece in June about Fortnite and saying if there is a more red than purple, it's Tricera Ops, which is like a almost like a dinger cosplay suit. It's like it's literally like a sexy video game character wearing like a dinger head for the most part. Would that be the official Fortnite skin of the PDP? And I will say, Ryan, I know you've asked the question a few times. I got nothing for you, man, and I really apologize. Ryan, we love you. I got nothing on Fortnite, man. I really don't.
I watched Brendan Rodgers play Fortnite once on Twitch. He tweeted out a link of, like, I'm playing Fortnite right now. Watch me play. And I had no idea. Like, I play video games. I don't have any clue what's going on in that game. You can just, like, build shit in midair. Like, he's just, like, building, like, little platforms to shoot people from and, like, shields and, like, no, I don't get into fantasy video games. If I'm going to play a video game, like, if I'm going to shoot somebody in a video game, it's going to be a Nazi. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, I'm going to I'm gonna do
Wolfenstein.
Like a realistic... Yeah, although I do own Wolfenstein, which I guess is somewhat fantasy level. But it's not, like, weird futuristic. We're on other planets and we're doing things that don't make sense. Although I have barely actually gotten into Wolfenstein.
But it has swept through baseball this year.
Yeah, it's, like, baseball. The biggest thing in the world. I will say I'm very much out of touch with the youth on Fortnite. So I apologize. I apologize for that, Ryan.
Yeah.
We got a series of questions like this from Adam. Why does the universe hate Rockies fans? From Jack. Yep. Why does it hurt so much? From at @yesrun_ why do we do this to ourselves? I don't know because it's sports, man. Like, it's if you come back and make it, the elation that you will feel on October 1st is better than anything that you felt all season long. And if they don't, you know, in baseball, it sucks because you lasted through this for 6 months and it may not pay any dividends. And that's why it's brutal in baseball. But that's why we do it, you know, because the payoff could be the greatest feeling that you have as a sports fan, you know, in your memory. And other than that, I don't really know why.
That's why we do it. And we it's a lot harder to say, oh, it's easy to. You know, to celebrate the wins and not dwell on the losses. But, like, no, everyone dwells on the losses so much more than they celebrate the wins.
Yeah.
It's like you always remember when you were disappointed by anything more than you remember the time that you were embraced by it.
Yeah, that's true.
From Tristan Boyce at Tristan_Boyce1. Honestly, what do you think the 2019 season looks like if we go all in on the rookies? Pretend Tapia, Dahl, McMahon get the majority of starts at their spots. Hampson, Rogers split time. Are we a playoff caliber team with them as our core alongside Arenado and Story?
Absolutely. I think you're a better team than you are this season. I think you might not start quite as hot, but I think as those guys get innings and continue to showcase their talent, you cannot convince me that an everyday lineup featuring Garrett Hampson in a spot that could ordinarily be occupied by Pat Valeka or Ian Desmond or somebody like that, you cannot convince me that's a worse off team. Or that a Raimel Tapia and David Dahl and Charlie Blackmon outfield is markedly worse than a Gerardo Parra / Blackmon / Cargo / whoever else is in their outfield.
I feel so bad for Raimel Tapia. Raimel Tapia has never had an opportunity to play the big league level.
And I don't know why. I don't know what it is.
He's not going to get it with the Rockies. They should trade him now if they're not.
They should have traded him 2 years ago. If this was going to be the route for Raimel Tapia, of him wasting away hitting .315 in AAA every year and never getting a shot at the major league level, they should have traded him when his value was higher. Because right now, Raimel Tapia is just he's an aging prospect. You know what I mean? Like, Tapia has turned into...
He's not old, but, like, yes, he's an aging prospect.
He's 24, though, you know? And Raimel Tapia signed at 16 years old. Like, this is a guy who... When the Rockies inked him to a deal, you looked at him and thought, actually, I'm not sure if he signed right at 16. Let's see what his BR. Okay, so he came over and played his first season at 17. But Raimel Tapia has done nothing but star everywhere he's been throughout his minor league career. He is a career 319, 364, 461 hitter in the minor leagues. And he has played in all of 112 major league games over three seasons, few of those as a starter, I would say. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is anymore with Raimel Tapia, and I don't know why the Rockies have simultaneously refused to give him a shot, but also not moved him on for something else.
Yeah, and I feel bad. So, I mean, I hope we get the chance somewhere else because he deserves it. That's all. That's all. All right, let's go from Jason Vanderteeg at VandyTig6. What are some potential free agent targets? I would really like to see AJ Pollock in purple pinstripes. And another one that was similar to that from Mike Flick at Flickerbach. Who is one free agent that you would love to see in a Rockies jersey in 2019? So your pool here:
Bryce Harper,
Manny Machado. Let's see, DJ LeMahieu, Patrick Corbin,
Adam,
AJ Pollock, Craig Kimbrell.
Man, Craig Kimbrell would be fun. Maybe another fun guy. I feel like I haven't heard his name.
I'm just looking at SpotTrac right now. Yeah, he's a free agent after this year. I did not realize that. I don't think anyone's talking about Craig Kimbrell being a free agent, but yeah.
I think money wise, they probably got deep enough pockets to bring him back. I think it'll be fun to see Bryce Harper.
Josh Donaldson. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if Bryce Harper is truly about numbers and not winning, he'll come to Denver.
That's the thing. Like, I don't think that there are realistic options out there that are that much better for the Rockies than where they are building from within. You know, like, are you going to spend a bunch of money to bring somebody in to replace DJ LeMahieu?
You're not going to spend a bunch of money on your bullpen again. You know that for sure.
God knows you're not going
to
do that.
You're going to have Jake McGee and Brian Shaw make bounce backs.
Who's the best available catching free agent? That's probably where the Rockies should start because they don't have anything in the system.
Yeah.
Because Dom Nunez has turned into a ghost. Tom Murphy, I think we're seeing the window is closing very swiftly on Tom Murphy.
Matt Wieters, Yasmani Grandal, Devin Mesoraco, Jonathan Lucroy, Wilson Ramos. Wilson Ramos would be interesting, but he hasn't not been healthy the last couple of years. Martin Maldonado, defensive whiz. Kurt Suzuki, Rene Rivera, Nick Hundley. Bring him back. Jeff Mathis, Drew Butera, and so on.
Just sign Jonathan Lucroy and Nick Hundley and have to battle it out with Tony Wolters and Drew Butera for some reason and Chris Iannetta.
Why not?
See how many. Maybe they'll carry all five next year.
That'd be fun.
Why not?
I mean, yeah. Get, you know, Daniel Murphy's homophobic ass in here. That'd be great. Yeah.
God in heaven.
No, and honestly, like, you know, they're positioned to go forward with the core that they have.
Yeah.
Because in theory, even if DJ LeMahieu goes, you've got Garrett Hampson or Brendan Rodgers to take over that second base spot who are ready. Garrett Hampson's definitely ready. Rodgers is probably close.
Yeah, he'll be there next year.
You'll have Story and Arenado on the left side. Ian Desmond's probably going to be at first. So Ryan McMahon is, again, the odd man out, as always. You'll have, in theory, Dahl, Blackman, and X in the outfield right now. You know, if you did go somewhere, maybe try to grab an outfielder. That could be interesting, but I don't think that's a for sure thing. Like, you know, some of the outfielders like Harper, Adam Jones, AJ Pollock, Michael Brantley, Curtis Granderson is old.
I think the thing that stands out most about the outfield situation, if the Rockies go into 2019 and Charlie Blackman is the center fielder on this team,
they are in dire straits.
Yeah. Yeah. That is a real bad situation. Charlie
Blackman. Hunter Pence. Let's get Hunter Pence in here.
Oh, man. Maybe he'd unblock us. Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah.
Charlie Blackman, I think, had two above average seasons defensively in the outfield, and it was on the heels of a lot of bad seasons, and it preceded a lot of bad seasons defensively. And I think because of the persona and because of the bat, he convinced everybody that he was an above average center fielder. That deal, and we said this when the Rockies signed Charlie Blackman to that contract, by the time the deal is up, it's not going to be franchise-changing money. It's not really franchise-changing money right now, but that deal is going to be an albatross. The only thing that saves it from being that, if the Rockies move Chuck to a corner, and Chuck then goes from being this kind of tween. Right now, I feel like he's in an awkward spot because he's still a guy that bats high up in the order. He's a leadoff hitter. He's a two-hole hitter. He needs to be able to run. He needs to be able to cover a lot of ground in the outfield. If Chuck moves into a corner spot, puts on a little weight, turns himself into a legitimate bat-only type of outfielder, a guy who plays an adequate left or right field, but is there in the lineup primarily because of his offense, then I think the deal becomes something where you look at him as a lineup linchpin and he's somebody who you're paying a lot of money to be an offensive force for your team. Right now, you are paying a very substandard center fielder for offensive production that has not been worth that money this year.
Right. That's bad. Clearly, he seems like he is hurt. So he had that quad injury. Seems like it's still, and that's a nagging thing that'll stick with him probably the entire year. It clearly has. You got to hope next year he comes back. He's the normal Chuck we saw last year that got that contract signed. As a corner, that production that he puts up in a corner would still be great for a corner outfield spot.
Yeah, it'd be fine.
Yeah.
And I think it could get better if he settled into just being an offensively focused guy.
Yeah.
I
think you're going forward with guys you're going to stay with. I mean, even the rotation. The rotation's still going to be pretty much the same next year.
Yeah,
I think you could maybe get a guy like Peter Lambert to come in at some point and kind of fill out the back end.
With Jeff Hoffman, presumably, will get a look. You would
right now that the Rockies have not had a start made by a pitcher over 30, and that's great. So they're not paying a lot of guys a lot of money to start games for them. And the bullpen, they got those three high price guys, and then you got Scott Oberg getting paid the minimum. Maybe someone like Harrison Musgrave takes the next step. DJ Johnson, guys that can fill in like that. But Ottavino will be the question as well.
Yeah, another big free agent.
Yeah, I mean, if he's going to be a free agent, if they want to get him back, they'll probably have to pay him, unfortunately. So,
I think is worth it because he's proven to be effective.
Yeah, I think it is. But at the same time, like they saw what paying a lot of money to relief pitchers can do. And Adam, we love Adam Ottavino. He has been up and down from year to year, just same way Jake McGee has. They paid Jake McGee the money after a great season, and he has been awful. Adam Ottavino 2 years ago was awesome.
Yeah.
Last year, he was horrific. This year, he's been almost untouchable. So, the life of a believer,
Awesome.
And paying for it, I'm not sure the Rocks will do that again. I think Ottavino will probably get a lot of money from somebody else, and I think he'll be gone personally. I hope not, but I think I got a gut feeling on that one.
Ultimate lesson is it's going to be an interesting offseason, but hopefully we won't be talking about it for another couple of weeks.
Yes.
To say the least. I got to run.
Yeah.
But because I have to go have lunch with, as he deems himself, the host of the best Rockies podcast in town, Nate Kreckman.
God, that guy.
And
that
we are the second best Rockies podcast in town, according to Nate Kreckman. But really, though, you can subscribe to Nate's The Athletic podcast, and it's good stuff. He gets to talk with Nick Groke and do some other Rockies breakdown that's probably more serious and legitimate. So I'm gonna go do that and try to not think about how I'm gonna vomit seven times before this game tonight because it's a big one. Rockies D-backs open up a three-game series in Arizona this evening. Yeah. They're all huge from here on out, and we'll be with you every step of the way. He's Anthony. I'm Tyler. We'll talk to you next week when hopefully things are much brighter. Love you. Bye.